I can't control God.
It's a risk you're taking, you know?
I can't control the wind or God. So then I will call out the tour director, but I'm just saying that if the wind blows, there's nothing I can do about that. I can't control God. Talk to him.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Body Serve. I'm Jonathan.
I'm James.
We are in the throes of Rome, but let's begin with an update on Rublev's health. After the last episode where he won Madrid against Felix in the final, and he told us that he had all sorts of health problems throughout that tournament.
Well, it's not angina. Thank God. Apparently that was a translation error. It's a similar word to strep throat. In Russian, I've heard, one of those false friends, if you will. So luckily it's not a heart condition. It was a tonsil abscess or a paratonsillar abscess, which is actually quite a serious thing. He spent 2.5 days in the hospital. The abscess is, get ready for it, this is gross. It's pus-filled tissue in the back of the mouth that forms, but this is what it is, that forms near the tonsils.
Well, people have Google.
Okay, well, I'm telling people what it is. Oh. It's caused by a bacterial infection. It can be very painful and make it difficult to swallow or even open the mouth. It causes fever, tonsillitis, headache, a number of unpleasant symptoms. And the infection, if not treated, can actually spread to other parts of the body. So it is a very serious thing that needs immediate medical attention. And the most common treatment is, you're not going to like this either, is draining it and providing antibiotics.
Oh my God.
So he's back. After those few days in the hospital, it seems like that did the trick and he is back. But this is really a very serious thing that he was playing through.
Over the last few days, this tweet has been going around from this account at NickSF where there's an image of the live rankings, the top 10 live rankings. And instead of on the right-hand side showing, you know, lost first round, is in the final, whatever, it's photoshopped to give a rundown of all the afflictions that have befallen the top 10 men. Novak Djokovic got hit in the head. Yannick Sinner, hip injury. Carlos, arm injury. Daniil, hip injury. Zverev, sick in the head. Rublev, tonsil abscess. Rud, back injury. Urkac, tiebreak addiction. Dimitrov, bisexual and balding. Tsitsipas, daddy issues.
You really loved this thing, didn't you?
I really did.
There, as you said, there is a market for bisexual and balding. Definitely.
I said that?
Yeah, you tweeted from our account.
Okay, so, you know, give the specificity of my words. So that's an entree, if you will, into the story that's been dominating the last couple days, and that was Novak Djokovic being hit in his head by a water bottle, a metal water bottle that came loose from a spectator's backpack.
This is a very strange thing. I don't think I've ever seen anything of the like in tennis. As Novak was leaving the court after his win over Mute, he was in the tunnel area and people are leaning over, getting autographs. The first video I saw was just, all you saw was like a water bottle fall down, hit him right on top of the head, and he kind of got knocked down and was in pain.
I couldn't even tell what the object was.
Right, right. So at first you have no idea if somebody threw it, dropped it, whatever. It looked like chaos down there. You can imagine if you're him and you're just going about your business and something knocks you up the head, it is a very shocking thing, right? You don't know what it is. You don't know if somebody threw it intentionally. So in the moment, his reaction is pretty normal, right? Like, and you also don't know if you're hurt. It probably hurt initially, but you're like, is this serious? Am I bleeding? What's going on?
I saw a lot of people minimize the actual blunt force trauma of it, saying, oh, it's just a water bottle. Well, A, it's metal, and what if it were filled with water? That's heavy. And if it's coming from a distance, I don't know physics, but gravity, and all those things, it would be painful, in my right. layman's opinion.
Well, and again, you are not expecting something to knock you in the head as you're walking off the court. So painful and shocking. So more videos came out, and it appeared that this guy bent over, had a water bottle in his backpack, and it slid out. And, I mean, what are the odds, really, that it hit him square on top of the noggin?
Well, if we believe the dispatches from the head honchos at Crockefeller Center, or 30 Croc, if you will, this was all a big conspiracy, and people need to be investigated. That guy needs to be sought after by police. He needs to be detained, find out where he works, what he does for a living, and depending, send him to Guantanamo.
I mean, this incident has taken certain people down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theories, demanding an investigation, accusing, you know, the establishment of a purposeful knock upside the head. It's wild. Because in the video, like, it's pretty clear that this was not a hired gun.
Instead, we get comparisons to the Monica Seles stabbing.
Mm-hmm. Like, very disgusting, honestly, to make that comparison or analogy. Reportedly, Novak was bleeding that night. He was dealing with some dizziness, headaches, nausea. He did come back the next day to practice wearing a bicycle helmet. And I was like, that, you know what? He ate that. That's funny. Nice way to make light of the situation, but it is very serious. Like, players cannot be worrying about projectiles falling on top of them as they sign autographs. I mean, personally, that would be the last autograph I ever signed.
The next day against Tabilo, Djokovic shows up a shadow of even his 50% self. Like, it was not good in that loss.
Mm-hmm. Just lifeless. I mean, he didn't have his shots and didn't even appear to be trying to find a way. He was just totally flat.
Losing 6-2, 6-3, afterward he said, quote, "The way I felt on court today was just completely like a different player entered into my shoes. Just no rhythm, no tempo, no balance whatsoever on any shot." Was it because of the hit on the head? He said essentially that maybe that had something to do with it.
I don't know, but maybe.
One of the diagnoses that have been proffered is that of a concussion, which he said he didn't have any scans or any, you know, real testing done the night of. But now he's going to go do it because this is concerning.
Right. And actually, very often, MRIs don't show concussions. Like, they could be diagnosed just seeing a doctor and explaining your symptoms and getting an examination. So he could have a concussion, have no idea. When a player says that something affects the way that they play, that they potentially have an injury, we like to believe them. It would be an explanation for why he was just not himself at all on court. It wasn't just a bad match. It was like he appeared to be not trying that hard. And that's very unlike him. And even the last game, people were like, is he tanking? I'm like, well, maybe something else is going on.
He now heads to Roland Garros with less than optimal preparation match play. Only a semifinal in Monte Carlo and a round of 32 in Rome. But last year, he didn't really have a great lead up to the French Open either. And look what happened.
Right. Last year, he had a round of 16 in Monte Carlo, a quarter in both Banja Luka and Rome, and then won the tournament, of course, beating Casper Ruud in the final. There are no favorites going into Roland Garros. I mean, he is the favorite, right? And he's not in great shape. Hasn't had an exceptional year, no titles, losing to a few players that were rather surprising. This one, there are some extenuating circumstances, of course.
There's enough time yet to talk about all that stuff. People have been talking a lot this week about how wide open this field is going to be and the best chance for anybody not named Rafa or Novak to win this tournament in the last 20 years, probably. Mm. And sure, but I'm not ready to talk about that yet.
All right. The other big story of the week is Camila Giorgi appearing on the ITIA's list of retired players, out of nowhere. A few journalists spotted this earlier, last week.
And at first, you're thinking, well, this is such a Georgie move. This makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
To just decide you're done, file the paperwork, never hear from her again. But then there's another way to think about it, which a lot of us did. Remember we had an episode titled Doubters, Debtors, and Creditors or something like
Debtors, that? Debtors, divas, and something.
Yeah. And that was because Miss Georgie has a long history of scamming the authorities.
Well, I think just to be safe, we will say a long history of people making allegations against her and her family,
mm-hmm.
as far as owing them a lot of money or kind of having handshake contracts, promising to pay them back and never did. We have the vaccine thing, of course, which we'll get to soon. And it just gets worse.
It seems she's under investigation for tax evasion in Italy.
Yes, this was reported by Gazzetta dello Sport, which is a legitimate source, a prestigious sporting newspaper in Italy. And they reported that the Georgie family has been notified that there are several gaps on their tax returns, and they are under investigation by the Guardia di Finanza, which is a militarized police force that investigates financial crimes.
The authorities believe that she left Italy and is currently in the United States. Where in the world is Camilla Sandiego?
People, of course, are making jokes before this news came out. Oh, I wonder what nefarious activities have led to her retiring. And usually players are accused of something having to do with doping or whatever. But I knew with Georgie it was going to be something far more creative than that.
On top of this, her vaccine fraud case is not over. She's now expected to appear before the magistrate in Vicenza on July 16th. And the prosecutor's office there requested a trial. A trial.
Yes. You may remember back in 2022, two doctors in Vicenza were arrested for allegedly faking a number of COVID-19 vaccines in order to help people get this thing called a green pass, which is proof that you've been vaccinated. And at the time, that was required for international travel. Following the investigation, among those people accused of taking fake vaccine documents were the singer Madame and Camilla Georgie and her entire family. Following the investigation, the prosecutor's office there has recommended the indictment of 19 people, including Camilla. Back when this happened, the Australian Open in 2023 was the first opportunity to ask her questions about this, and she responded with,
"I didn't know about the doctor's problems. I'm fine. She's the one who has problems with the law in Italy." The doctor tells a different tale, because the doctor says Camilla had come asking for the possibility of obtaining false certifications of all the mandatory vaccines, as well as the COVID vaccine. "I can confirm with absolute certainty that none of the vaccines for the Georgie family were actually administered."
Okay, so what this is telling us is that the doctor, this is Daniela Grillone Tecioiu, is totally screwed. Because now she's singing. She's going to tell everything, apparently. And, of course, this is an accused fraudster. So it would be unfair to take her word as gospel here. But the doctor says, "Yep, the Georgie family came to me. We faked all their vaccines." Why this is interesting in tennis terms is that in 2021... when it was required to be vaccinated to enter Canada, Camilla Georgie came here and won the National Bank Open, the Canadian Open. If she's found guilty of faking a vaccine, does that have any impact on her title? Probably not, but I'm still going to keep this campaign going.
It is one of the things you're most invested in. You want that title stripped.
Originally, they were holding the doctors in confinement, and then a judge was like, "Listen, the vaccine requirement is gone. There's literally no risk to putting them out on bail, so just let them go."
After all this happened this past week, Miss Georgie finally merges on Instagram, saying, quote, "I am happy to formally announce retirement from my tennis career. I am so grateful for your wonderful love and support for so many years. I cherish all the beautiful memories. There have been many inaccurate rumors about my future plans, so I look forward to providing more information about exciting opportunities ahead. It is a joy to share my life with you, and let's continue this journey together. With much love, Camila.
Her approach whenever she's been confronted with things like this is head in the clouds. I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm fine. That's not my problem. And it continues today. When she was accused of the vaccine fraud originally in late 2022, whenever you Googled her, the Google News results were flooded with pictures of her in lingerie. So whether or not that had been manipulated in any way, it was actually quite difficult to scroll through all of the news results and get to an actual breaking news story. Her father, Sergio Giorgi, has always been an eccentric figure in tennis. Obnoxious.
I think it's pronounced Sergio.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The entire Giorgi circus will be missed by some.
The syndicate. The Giorgi syndicate.
The crime syndicate. These accusations of like minor crimes and misdemeanors have followed her throughout her career since 2014, which was a breakout year for her. And when John Wertheim published in Sports Illustrated the story about, it was actually about how difficult it is to become a professional tennis player if you're not independently wealthy. It was placed in the context of, it doesn't cost a lot of money to play tennis, but to break into the professional ranks, it costs a hell of a lot of money. And a lot of times you have these kind of handshake deals where coaches will coach you for free. If you promise them a percentage of your prize money for a certain number of years, these can become very exploitative. But the story featured a number of people who had allegedly coached the Giorgis or lent them money and had never heard from them again. And she was asked about it shortly after, and she was like, I don't want to talk about this. I don't know what you're talking about. Denial is always the strategy with them. So at this moment, if you believe the Italian newspapers, Camila is on the lam from a tax investigation.
This story will continue to give us moments over the next few months, it appears. Now to the actual tennis that's being played in Rome right now.
Of course, the tennis world was rocked last week when Tsitsipas announced their breakup. Paolo Badosa has been doing quite well this week since that announcement.
Until today.
Sure, but still a good performance. Winning the first set against Coco Gauff, losing in three.
Big wins against Mira Andreeva in straight sets. Then Emma Navarro, who's been playing really well all year, taking out Schneider in the third round before losing to Coco Gauff today in three sets.
This year she's been on the comeback trail from a stress fracture in her back. That happened around Wimbledon. She didn't play for the rest of 2023 after Wimbledon. And the year had been a struggle. She opened her Miami tournament against Simona Halep, who was returning from the doping suspension, beat Simona Halep. But the results have been pretty few and far between for Paola.
She recently told WTA Insider podcast that doctors told her in March that, quote, it would be complicated to continue her tennis career. And for her, being able to play three or four more years would be amazing. That's not great news on the health front.
No, back injuries are so tough and so scary because you want to think about your life after tennis as well. You want to be able to live a full life. But looking at her results in that context is like, wow, I'm so happy for her. And you remember what got her to winning the Indian Wells title and all that.
Probably the biggest tennis news, actual tennis play news this first week was from Rafa Nadal. He won his first match in three sets against Sisu Bergs, who was deferential toward him at the net afterward, I guess.
What are you trying to do here?
I was trying to be a little bit messy, but I guess I shan't.
I think we did enough.
You get the drift.
Yeah. Deferential after keeping that elderly gentleman out there for almost 3 hours.
Then comes his next match against Ubi Urkac, and he loses 6-1, 6-3, the fewest games he won in a loss on clay since 2005 or 3. It's been 19 to 21 years since that's happened.
Urkac, of course, is the person who ushered Roger Federer into retirement. His last match against him at Wimbledon. Let's not talk about that. A lot of people are like, wow, that would be funny. No, It wouldn't be funny at all. Not to me.
Rafa said in press, quote, he talked about his participation at the French Open in two ways. One being, okay, I'm not ready, I'm not playing well enough. Another is to accept how I am today and work the proper way to try to be in a different way in 2 weeks. If I have to say what's my feeling and if my mind is closer one way or the other, I'm going to say, be in Roland Garros and try my best.
Yeah, this was hard to hear. And I know he's just coming off this very lopsided loss, and he's kind of talking through his emotions in press. I expect that he will be in Roland Garros, but to hear him say that, well, maybe, maybe not, that's, you know, it's hard to hear.
It's not the first time. He's been speaking this way the entire time, and then his comments at this tournament have me remembering us on this podcast, me telling you, I don't think he's ever really said definitively this is his last season. And you're like, well, yes, it is. He said it. It is. It is. And then here he is at this tournament saying what I thought I'd been hearing all along.
Okay. I could have sworn we heard those words come out of his mouth last year. But you're right. Now he's equivocating. The Rome tournament tried to give him a little tribute ceremony and he declined. And then he was asked about it. And he said, quote, I never said that was going to be my last tournament here, and that he didn't expect a ceremony, but he did qualify that and said he was 98% sure that it was his last, but not 100%.
What's likely at play here is that he doesn't want all the fanfare. He doesn't want all the ceremonies. And if this is his way of keeping that at bay, that might be what we're witnessing.
Right, right. So are we seeing Rafa's last clay season? I don't know. He says he's 98% sure that yes, it is the last. But the fans are going to take that 2%. And of course, you saw those images of Rafa walking over that bridge that goes over the grounds and greeting. I mean, that crowd. Were all those people let into the grounds? How does the grounds even fit that many people? That was wild. And I think that's the extent of the ceremonies that he's going to tolerate at this point until it's his last tournament. Go out, do a little wave like the Pope, and you have this crowd of adoring people screaming your name. I can't even imagine what that's like.
Madison Keys, with at least a quarterfinal in back-to-back Masters 1000 events, making the semifinals in Madrid, losing to Świątek there, and now will play Świątek again in the quarterfinals in Rome.
Regardless, it's a great little swing for Madison. Some cute wins over Osorio, Haddad Maya, and then Kirsteia. Love to see it. 6-2, 6-1.
Danielle Collins is back on her bullshit in Rome. After a quick little detour in Madrid where she lost, she's looking imperious in Rome, just swatting everybody away with aplomb. Just totally handled everything Caroline Garcia had to give her. And then again today, winning 6-love, 6-3 against Begu. She's going to play Victoria Azarenka in the quarterfinals.
She's provisionally ranked number 12 right now and number 4 in the race. She was ranked number 56 just 2 months ago.
Naomi Osaka making the round of 16 in Rome. Looking pretty good doing it until her match today where she lost in straight sets to Zhang Qinwen.
Yes, Naomi got her first top 20 win on clay, which was a shocker to me. That was Kostyuk. Then got her second top 20 win over Kazatkina. The matchup against Zhang was interesting for people because Naomi now works with Wim Fissette, who left Zhang Qinwen at the end of last year. And Zhang was not shy about expressing her feelings about how that relationship ended. She felt that what he did was really unethical. And you've got to imagine that he was speaking to the Osaka camp while he was still working with Qinwen. It doesn't feel nice, right? For a coach to say, I'm ending our contract because I'm going back to Naomi.
Qinwen admitted that she was frustrated at first. Says, quote, but you ask me right now, after many months, I will say, you know, it's just a normal match for me. I treat her like a usual opponent. Of course, I have more respect to her because she came back as a mother.
This was in response to a question from Prakash Amritraj on Tennis Channel. She answered that question so beautifully, and you could see her almost chuckling as he was asking it. because of course she knows what's coming. She's moved past it. The win over Naomi, I'm sure, made it really easy to move past it. But she said such beautiful things about Naomi coming back after having a baby, and that she feels only women can understand how difficult that must be.
Initially, we were going to put the Georgie stuff with these other two retirement announcements and have a little bit of a retirement section. Instead, we decided to have Georgie stand on her own in a mess segment. Mm-hmm. First, we got word from Diego Schwartzman that he plans to retire next year. He wants to retire on home soil in Argentina. So that'll happen in February 2025, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Rumors started circling last week about Dominic Thiem's impending retirement. And he confirmed that he will be leaving the sport following the Vienna tournament this year, which happens in October. He released a statement on his socials and said, yeah, it is official. I am retiring for a few reasons. One is obviously the wrist injury that he's not been able to rehab in a way that's satisfactory to him. And the second is just his feeling on court. He's just not feeling it. And he's been thinking about retiring for a long time.
He managed to get back into the top 100 roughly about 6 months into his return, but never able to move higher than number 72. He made one ATP final in Kitzbühel last year in 2023.
Now his most recent title is his US Open title, his lone major title win. And ever since that win, tennis seemed rather difficult for him. And the wrist injury, we know the history of wrist injuries in tennis. Del Potro was another one. Dominic is somebody who threatened the big four so much, who won in late stages of majors, who has 17 titles, and will still be a bit of like, oh, he could have, you know, if only that didn't happen, he could have done more.
I remember the first time I saw him, it was at the Rogers Cup, and we had night tickets to see Federer. Well, I guess it was just incidental that it was Federer. We had night tickets that day, and we were there watching it, and I snuck out because he was playing on grandstand, and I was able to sit in front row seats and watch, get my first sighting up close of all that Dominic Thiem carries with him.
Right. Those were the Bleach Blonde days, I think.
Yeah.
He, at the moment, is 5-7 against Novak, beat him twice in later stages of Roland Garros. He has 4 wins on clay over Rafa Nadal, and he's 5-2 over Roger Federer.
As you mentioned, a lot of what-ifs with Dominic looking back on his career. One of the what-ifs that I don't even want to contemplate is if he hadn't come back from 2 sets down in that US Open final against that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now that alone deserved TBS Hall of Fame enshrinement. I don't know if we did.
I don't think so, because it was such a nightmare of a final.
It was also, yes, but I think it was also mitigated by his not wanting to share any of his wealth with the peasants who didn't earn their keep.
Right. And also mitigated by the fact that they're good friends. He wasn't doing a good deed. He just won a tournament.
Still, it was a job that needed to be done.
Indeed it was. And he will remain, I guess, the only male player who won the US Open with no one there?
To date.
But so far. Maybe let's go back for a second, just talk about the women's quarterfinal lineup, because it was just finalized while we were recording. Those R's really gave me a hell of a run there. We've got Iga versus Madison, Coco Gauff, and Zhang Qinwen. Azarenka Collins. Azarenka made quick work of Sakkari. As you said, Collins has been really bashing her way through this tournament, and most since Miami. And then Ostapenko-Sabalenka. Sabalenka leads that head-to-head 2-0. Their most recent matchup went 3 sets. Sabalenka was down match points 3 times in her match tonight against Svitolina, but ended up winning in a tiebreak.
Ostapenko has been all over the place at this tournament, but managing to scrape by.
And then today against Sramkova, who beat Sonia Kenin, who actually was looking really good. Kenin had a bit of a tiff with the crowd in Rome, which is not unusual. Similar to Shapovalov's shut the fuck up incident, she was mad about having to continue to play while it was sprinkling. and I believe she yelled, "Fuck you," at the crowd. Was quite the display.
The crowd in Rome has not been its best self.
No.
This tournament.
No. Sebastian Corda did an Instagram after one of his matches saying, "You talked inappropriately about my girlfriend the entire match, so haha," basically. He beat Flavio Cobolli, but did not have a good time, was booed through the match for whatever reason, I guess for the fact that he was playing in Italian. Ostapenko was on Kazatkina's What the Vlog.
And Alex McPherson wrote a story about how their friendship has blossomed and what happened for them to get over their previous tensions.
Right. They've known each other forever. They knew each other in juniors. And a few people have talked about Yelena and said, oh, she's mean, or she, you know, she says things that come off as really insulting. And of course, there's that acceptance speech at Charleston when Ostapenko was the loser and she was really unkind to Dasha. That was, what, 7 years ago at this point? Apparently their relationship was strained, but now they're good. And because both of them are such straight shooters, they actually talked about that in the locker room when they were shooting. They were like, you know, we went through some tough times. We did not like each other, but now I want my locker to be right next to you.
And apparently Natalia had a fair bit to do with this mending of the fences. Mm. And she said that, you know, they were young and immature, and now they're mature.
Right. Now they're grown women. And Natalia said, we've got a job to do. I have footage to shoot here.
Let's wrap this episode with this segment that we've been punting about Olympic qualification criteria.
This has always been a mystery to me, and rarely do I actually take the initiative to go look it up and see how one qualifies for the Olympics.
Well, you didn't, really.
Well, let me tell you. So you gave me a link to the ITF tennis rundown, and I found it inadequate. How it works is that there are 56 direct acceptances to the singles draw, based on the rankings as of June 10th, so right after Roland Garros. But you can only send 4 players per country. So it's not necessarily the top 56. It won't be. The draw is 64. So there are 8 spots up for grabs. Those are made up of 6 final qualification places, 1 host country place, and 1 universality place. Do you want to know what all those things mean?
I suspect.
I'm going to tell you, regardless. Yeah. Final qualification places, there are 2 types. One of them is continental places, meaning a player's performance at the Pan American Games, the Asian Games, or the African Games. And they give out 4 spots for that. And you do have to be greater than 400 in the rankings. So they're giving spots out for the winners of those tournaments. And one of them they give for the runner-up. I can't remember which one. Sorry. And the other type of final qualification type is the famous gold medalist / slam champion spot. Someone like Rafael Nadal, who will not qualify for Spain's team based on his ranking, will most likely get in through this type of final qualification spot. Again, you must be higher than number 400 in the rankings, and there are 2 spots available under this category. There's 1 opening for host country. That's pretty self-explanatory. But it's only used if the host country doesn't have an athlete in direct acceptance. This year it will not be used because France has a number of athletes who will qualify. And then finally, the universality place. This is why the ITF tennis link was inadequate. Nobody explains what the hell is a universality place. I had to look this up on the IOC website. And this is a place that is typically given to countries with smaller delegations. It's not allocated to nations with an average of more than 8 delegates across 2016 and 2020, and team sports are not included in that count. There you have it. The other requirement is that the player must have been part of a nominated team in either Davis Cup or BJK Cup, and the ITF website said they must have met the requirement. Like, so what is the requirement? Can you be more specific? And it just means that they have to be part of that team twice between Tokyo and Paris.
There's an interesting subplot developing specifically with the American contingent. whereby we are still a month out from final qualification being shored up. We're still some months away from the tournament itself, but players have already opted out. Ben Shelton has said that even if he qualifies, he's not going to play.
The ITF tennis website seems to have confirmed this, that he's not part of the race anymore for the Olympic spot. I imagine that we'll get a few more people saying that they don't feel like playing. This year it is in France, so it may be a little more accessible compared to it being in Tokyo in 2021. And of course there were all those COVID regulations. It was a much more complicated ask back in 2021. But regardless, it does interfere with the summer hardcourt schedule. This is going to be on clay.
The considerations for some of these players are how much training and effort do I want to put into more clay court tennis if I don't like it? Maybe I'm young enough if I'm a Ben Shelton where I can punt this Olympic opportunity feeling assured that I'll get another chance in 4 years. This is not my only opportunity to attend the Olympic Games. So many players talk about, well, so many tennis players, I think of the Williams sisters in particular. We see it with Rafa and how much he enjoys playing for his country. Even though, to people like myself, the Olympic gold medal isn't a big deal. Like when somebody wants to get into GOAT debates and then they start talking about Olympic medals, like, miss me with that. That's just my view. But you have a lot of tennis players who put a lot of import on these medals, on representing their country, on the experience. That's another part of it. How many athletes get to go to the Olympic Games? And for tennis players, that might be a selling point. You know, people say, well, I say that Olympic tennis isn't that big of a deal compared to, say, Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce winning another Olympic gold medal in the women's 100 meters. That is the pinnacle of her sport. So maybe for a lot of tennis players, part of the appeal is that they get to go and have a lark. You know, the stakes aren't that high. They get to compete. They get to be amongst other athletes at the peak of their powers from all over the world, all different disciplines. They get to maybe stay in the Olympic Village, have an experience that is completely unique to them. That's not really part of the week-to-week grind of their tennis careers.
I mean, it looks like fun. And everybody knows that the Olympic Village is wild.
The tournament is being held at the end of July into early August. To be playing clay court tennis then, if you're seriously gearing up for the US Open, it's a bit of an ask.
Yes, because you have two hardcourt masters following shortly after the Olympics in Canada and Cincinnati, Ohio. In 2021, Casper Ruud decided not to play the Olympics, remember, and then kind of cleaned up on those smaller European clay court tournaments. I imagine this year he'll play because it's clay in France. But the Canadian Open especially will take a hit. A number of players will withdraw, and we see it every Olympic cycle. Players are tired. They need a break. So if they're going to skip one Masters ahead of the US Open, it's probably going to be Canada. And that sucks for us. But understandable.
I wonder how much the effect of these sprawling Masters events will play a part in the decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're already committing large swaths that you normally wouldn't to these tournaments, and now you're being asked to do something extracurricular again from your regular schedule.
Mm-hmm. I think that's another thing to keep an eye on. These extended Masters, and more will be extended in future years. I wonder what the review process is. Like how the tournament owners and the tours will evaluate whether they've been successful. Is it just ticket sales and who's watching on TV? It seems like a lot of fans find it a slog. They find it annoying, but is that really enough to change minds?
No, because we've been to these big tournaments enough now to know that there's such a large percentage of people who show up to these events just to be there. Mm-hmm. Just to be seen, mm-hmm. Just to, oh, well, I was at the tennis, I saw Rafa Nadal. They don't care that the orders of play have been stretched to their limits. Well, instead of getting six matches as you normally would at the back end of a tournament, you're getting three. Or, you know, like, right. You're not getting as good a value for your money as the tournament goes on, in my mind. And why would they care if they're just going to be making more money, selling more tickets? I think one of the big drawbacks of this tournament spreading is the fan experience. For those who are hardcore tennis fans who don't have a lot of disposable income and take their opportunities to go to tennis. You know, it's. Mm-hmm. I think it's a diminishing return on investment at this point.
I think this could be the death of the grounds pass at Masters tournaments. Fans may realize at one time this was such a bargain to buy a grounds pass and get to see a ton of tennis and get to see high quality players and high quality matches. Now you have a lot less to choose from, especially as the tournament goes on. Everything is spread out. You're getting, you know, less quality and less quantity for a grounds pass.
The grounds pass will still be worth it for the first two rounds.
I mean, unless prices keep going up and up and up, you know. The other thing is that a lot of tennis fans say will use their year's vacation on watching one tournament from start to finish. So you can no longer fly to Rome and watch round one to the final in 1 week. I guess it's not something that will change minds of leadership, but it's something that's lost for a lot of fans.
Anecdotally, I remember when we first started going to Cincinnati, we knew people who had tournament passes. In, like, say, the 200 level, you could get a tournament pass for, like, $700. And that's a good value then. It's now almost tripled, from what I understand, in less than 10 years. And now the tournament pass will require more sessions. So then necessarily the cost of that is going to be more. Mm-hmm. They're going to be able to sell week one passes, week two passes, championship weekend passes. It's just seemingly a never-ending attempt to get more money out of people's pockets.
And it follows the trend of basically every entertainment experience following COVID. Everything has nearly doubled in price. Even going to the movies, going to a concert, anything that you want to do for fun to break up the monotony of this life, everything is much, much more expensive and more out of reach for a big chunk of the population. So I only brought that up to say this is something to keep an eye on over the next few years. Maybe these 10-day Masters things or 12-day or however long they are, we will no longer be talking about them because they'll just be normal in a few years.
Probably.
But I don't know. I wonder if there is any feedback process, like if there's any review from the leadership to assess how it's going. That's all.
That's episode 342. You had initially written on this agenda that the title could be The Syndicate. And then I told you I had another idea, but I couldn't tell you what it was until we were recorded. And so now I'm suggesting 30 Croc. We'll see what happens. My name is Jonathan. You can find me on Twitter at @tennis_John.
And I'm James at @ElliotJMR.
Two L's, two T's. You can find everything BodyServe related at linktree.com/thebodyserve. Thanks for listening.
Till next time.
Thank you very much.